Blago, His Life in Prison, Chicago Magazine, starts David Bernstein's story this way. Rod Blagojevich's first summer in prison, he recalls, was quite an awakening. From June through July of that year, the city endured 13 days above 100 degrees. 2 days reached 105, a temperature not seen in the area since 1878. The facility didn't have air conditioning either, he continues. The heat was oppressive. Sleeping in that heat was almost impossible to cool down. He employed a prison trick. He emptied out the contents of the plastic bag of his cereal that he had purchased from the commissary and filled it with ice right before evening lockdown. I eagerly embraced that cold bag of ice to try to sleep, in much the same way you would hug a hot water bottle in the wintertime. Much of the story is about simply what prison is like. Towards the end of the story, as the story goes on, you find out more about how Patty and the kids are doing, and you get more of his attitude about whether or not he should even be there. David Bernstein wrote the piece, and it really is fascinating. And I think the Chicago Tribune editorial today is really good, too. In the editorial, the Trib says, hey, all you politicians, read this. Read this. It's not, David, it's not pleasant. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, it's Devin. Hi, John. It's it's not club fed. That's for sure.
Well, you asked him that specifically, didn't you?
Right.
And yeah, what did he say?
That's how I started. That was the first question. He said, "No, this is prison. This is he's at a work camp, which is different. So he started out at a low security facility, which is they call it, what the slang there is behind the fence or behind the razor wire. So there are tall walls, razor wire fencing, cells, limited movement. It's prison. Where he is now is a work camp where he's got a considerable amount more freedom. So there are no walls. So prisoners can kind of, it's sort of the honor system. He lives in actually a converted motel. So there's actually think about like a basic motel with, so there's a tub and he shares a room with four other people, but there's like a bathtub and a normal motel room. Carpeted floors, that sort of thing.
Well, I think what was particularly telling in your story was it's not necessarily the conditions, although, it could be worse, it could be a lot better, but really the essence of prison isn't where you're staying, it's where you're not staying. He's lonely, he's isolated, he's going to get out in 24, he'll be 78 years old?
68, yeah.
68 years so old?
He went in as a 55-year-old, and he'll be out at 68.
Yeah. His exit day is May of 2024. You note in the story that this is where Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, Jeffrey Skilling, Jared Fogle, Jared of Subway Sandwich, and other fame.
Yes, yeah. Jared's there now. He's in the they're in different facilities now. So Rod is in the work camp, and Jared is in the low security prison right now. But they're next door to each other. This is a prison that has had a lot of prominent inmates over the years. Actually, at one point, Rod wasn't even the highest elected official in the prison. It was the president of Guatemala.
I shouldn't laugh. I mean, here's the thing. So I'm reading the piece, and I'm torn at times between having compassion for the governor, because I personally think his sentence is too long, and no compassion at all. I want to read a paragraph that you wrote to you and then let you comment. There have been heartbreaking moments, such as during last year's World Series. Blagojevich is a diehard Cubs fan, and the team had long been something he and his older daughter Amy bonded over. So Patty brought Amy a ticket to Denver, where Governor Blagojevich was being incarcerated, so that she could watch Game 3 with her dad on TV. One problem, the correctional officer in charge that month of the camp's cafeteria, which doubles as the visiting area, had a no-TV policy. Recalls Patty, Rod even went to him because I had already bought the ticket and asked him, my daughter bought a ticket. She wants to watch the game with me. Nope, not going to turn the TV on. Amy wound up just staying at home. What are you hearing when you think about that paragraph?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a father, and you know, whether you like Rod or not, whether you thought he was a good governor, I mean, as a human being, that's a hard, you know, I feel bad, especially for Amy Blagojevich. I mean, that's something. These years in prison have been very hard on the family, and that's one of the things I wanted to get across, not out of empathy or sympathy for Rod or you know, that sort of thing, but really just sort of offering an unvarnished look at, you know, what his life has been like, you know, since he stepped in that day in 2012.
So what are his days like? What is he doing in jail?
Well, so he sort of has a routine in a lot of ways. I mean, he wakes up and he reads the Bible. He says that he's really become a lot more spiritual and religious in prison. He finds it, you know, faith comforting, and you know, this is the, you know, his faith is sort of helping sustain his, you know, Rod has sort of said from the day he was arrested until the day he walked into prison that he was innocent. This sort of, he sees himself this helps him sustain himself, that, you know, these stories, you know, his faith that he will be vindicated. And he's down to his, you know, last appeal right now at the Supreme Court. So he reads the Bible in the morning. He, you know, he goes to, so there's sort of three things that kind of he works on. He's sort of a loner at prison. You would think that a gregarious politician would be, you know, basically the, you know, the man around prison, but he really sticks to himself a lot. And he exercises quite a bit, and not just sort of for the sake of exercise, but, you know, he uses it as a way to sort of set personal goals, daily goals. One of the things he said that he finds is, you know, with given such a long sentence, he needs to have these, you know, these daily, weekly, monthly, you know, these goals for himself you know, so it helps him pass the time. And so the other thing is sort of, you know, writing long letters to his family, talking to his family. It's a crushing to be away from his wife and kids. And then the other thing is he's writing. He's a huge history buff, so he does a lot of reading and writing. He's working on a series of essays that I think he would like to have published or do something. He says he's writing them for his kids right now about famous people and maybe not some famous people who have really overcome adversity, that's something that gives him meaning. That's one of the things he does is he tries to find meaning in things. And
yeah.
So he largely avoids, you know, things like the TV rooms and stuff like that, that, you know, so he really sort of focuses on himself.
Well, you know how when we write an email to our kids and they don't read the whole thing, or maybe we even write, I have texts. I've had tweets that my kids won't read, let alone texts, which can go over 140 characters. So there he is writing at first the family would visit every 4 or 5 weeks. Now they're down to about 4 times a year. And you write how he and Patty realize that he's losing touch with his daughters and they him. And he'll sometimes write them, you say, these long email, and they don't read them.
Yeah, well, he told me the story about how I forget which Christmas it was, but he spent quite a bit of time, hours and days, writing a prayer, a Christmas prayer for the kids, and he really took a lot of care and thought and spent hours and hours doing this, and he sends it there, and he's talking to Patty on the phone. He's like, well, what did the kids think of the email, you know, my prayer? And they're like, oh, they said it was long. You know, it was just not the reaction he was hoping for. I mean, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's some gallows humors that he finds, but it's, you know, he talks about this in a very serious way. And I think Amy Blagojevich, you know, talked about this in open court, was just how, you know, that she called it, you know, her relationship with her father is becoming, in her words, superficial. It's becoming, you know, the phone call, the 15 minutes or 10 minute phone calls, and I just, you know, just aren't a substitute for being, you know, being there.
Being there. Well, so towards the end of the piece, David Bernstein's on the phone. His piece in Chicago Magazine is about Governor Rod Blagojevich. This is the first interview you've been able to read or see on Channel 5 since the governor went away. And so towards the end, you say, I ask him in an email why he did not plead guilty and cut a deal for a lesser sentence. And so let's pick it up, David, where you say, I ask him in an email why the governor didn't plead guilty and cut a deal for a lesser sentence. Does he regret that, and why didn't he?
Well, you know, he gets asked that a lot, he says, because, you know, about 90% or more of federal defendants plead at some point and take a lesser sentence or whatnot. But Rod didn't. And he told me this. He said to plead guilty to a crime that he did not believe in his heart or mind that he committed would be a betrayal of the oath that he had taken to uphold, you know, the Constitution, that sort of thing. But he also thought it would be a betrayal to his family, to himself, and that he knew that, you know, by not pleading, he would face a potentially harsher punishment.
Well, most of the people that were following,
accept that.
Most of the people following the case, as you know, thought this dude's going down. I mean, none of us knew for sure, but I don't think we were shocked, maybe by the length of the sentence, but we weren't shocked that he was found guilty. Is he?
But, you know, it's interesting to relook at the case now, five some years later. Now that the pitchforks and torches are down, and I look at the case in a little bit of a different light. I mean, I was a harsh critic of Governor Blagojevich when he was governor. I wrote a really very critical piece that the governor's office and they weren't happy with at all. It's called Mr. Unpopularity, and it was really it was very tough on Rod. And you know, I did not think he was a very good governor, but the you know, he did, and he thought that he thought that he could you know, that the trial would vindicate him. He thought that he really believed that in his mind he doesn't think he got a fair trial, and there are some issues that, you know, we talked about a little bit and some other things, but he felt like the trial would vindicate him, and that's why he wanted to go to trial and not plead.
Then why did he give you an interview if previously you, of all people, you'd been so critical of him? How did that go down?
Well, that was actually one of my selling points. So I had started to take interest in Rod again in 2015, in the summer of 2015, when the appellate court overturned five of his 18 counts, the five counts all dealt with the selling of the Senate seat, which were those were the bombshell counts, the ones that were going to make Abraham Lincoln roll over in his grave. And I thought, so those were overturned. So I started to say, well, wait a second. You know, what if these were overturned, then you know, those were the big crimes. So, you know, what else is there? And it started getting me thinking about Rod again. And then, so I went to his resentencing hearing, and the judge, you know, resentenced him to the same amount. And I just really felt, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I just, you know, I just wanted to look into it. You know, I felt like those were the big charges, and then he was resentenced to the same thing, to the same amount of time. I thought, you know, it got me asking, does the punishment fit the crime?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I reached out to them, and actually my, you know, me being critical of them in the past, I think was for me a selling point to them. I didn't have I told them this. I said, I'm willing to listen to you. And I think they felt like no one in the media, no one in the public has really listened to them. And part of that has been Rod's own message. You know, he's been, you know, some of his antics and really, you know, obnoxious statements, and then some of the things he's done have really, you know, overshadowed in a lot of ways his legal case, which his appeal, if you actually look at some of the legal arguments in the appeal are, you know, not are kind of compelling. And I'm not saying he's innocent here. I'm just saying he's got a very interesting legal case. And I think he was his own worst enemy in terms of, you know, basically stamping on his own message.
There are times in the past, and even today, even after reading your piece today, I think, well, we have to go now, David, but I wonder how tethered he is to reality sometimes. The last sentence is a quote from him. I'm not giving up on my future. You imagine he still thinks that he's going to, maybe not be president, but be something else someday. And
I think he really does believe that. I think he believes that he will, in his mind, I think he has faith that he will eventually be vindicated somehow.
Yeah.
And that he will have the series of essays that he's writing on are people who have had to overcome adversity and have, had successful second acts, as he calls them. So I think in his mind, he does think that there is a Blagojevich 2.0 somewhere down the line.
Imagine that. You'll find it on newsstands everywhere. You can read it online right now at chicagomag.com. David Bernstein's Blago, His Life in Prison. What a pleasure, David. Keep writing. Keep doing
John,
what you guys do
great.
Over
thank
there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
right,
stay well.
You
bet.
All
take
right.
care. It's
you too. Bye-bye.